right now reporting while black. Reporters often find themselves in hostile situations. It's part of the job. But last month, New York Times reporter Solomon Moore found himself handcuffed on the hood of a police car, essentially for being in the wrong place at the wrong time and for being the wrong color. His article, Reporting While Black, appeared in the Sunday New York Times, and he's joining us today from the studios of NPR West. And Solomon Moore, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
If you have questions for Solomon Moore about being an African-American reporter covering race and crime or anything else, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can read his article and where it's linked on our blog and comment there as well at npr.org/blogofthenation. So, Solomon Moore, you were reporting a story in Salisbury, North Carolina. What was the story and then what happened?
Well, the story was about law enforcement tactics, anti-gang tactics, how law enforcement is trying to, get these guys to stop shooting each other, just to cool things down. And in fact, North Carolina was a place I went because it's a relatively new occurrence out there that they have all these gang problems out there compared to places like Chicago and Los Angeles. So I went out there, and they were looking at a new law that would really kind of reflect a lot of what other places had done, like in Los Angeles, to get rid of the gangs. And I heard about this little town called Salisbury, North Carolina, and they claimed they had a real big gang problem. They had a shooting a little while back, a few months ago, where a 13-year-old girl was killed after a party, and it was in the crossfire of two gangs. And they were pushing for stronger legislation, state legislation, to rein in gangs.
Mm-hmm. And so you were out there and essentially talking with some black gang members, correct? And then you were approached by a police officer and things got sort of unpleasant.
Yeah, I was kind of pressed for time, and it was late one night. I think I was in Durham at the time, and I needed to go to Charlotte the next day, so I drove late one night. It took me about two and a half hours to get to Salisbury, and I figured that, you know, if I wanted to talk with gang members, I could go and see them at night. I don't need to make a day appointment to do that. So I go into town. It's a small town, and I ask a cab driver where he thinks I could find some gang members just sort of hanging out. And he tells me, I go over there, and lo and behold, there are about 12 gang members out there kind of hanging out. Now, I don't know that they're gang members, but I'm assuming this because of how they're dressed, and I'm watching them sell drugs, basically, for a couple of minutes. And I walk up to them and start to talk with them about what I'm doing. I identify myself as a reporter. And they were pretty skeptical. They kind of wondered, you know, what would a New York Times reporter be doing in their town talking to them? And in fact, they assumed that I was a police officer. Hmm. Well, at that moment, three police cars drove up. One police officer got out of the car, a white police officer, told me to come over to him, which I did. And as soon as I walked over to him, he grabbed me and handcuffed me.
And slammed you down on the hood of the car, according to what you wrote in the New York Times, right?
He did.
Hmm. And so how did you respond to that? I mean, was it simply a question of saying, excuse me, officer, I'm a reporter, can you let me go?
Well, I have to admit I was a bit more animated than that. I was basically shouting at him that he had no right to do that, that he needed to get his hands off of me, that what he was doing was not legal. I was careful not to resist physically because I knew that if I did that, then I could be breaking the law. And I didn't hurl any insults at him or anything. I just basically started raving about what my rights were.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what you're based in L.A. I wonder what it felt like to hear a police officer in North Carolina say, this is the South. We do things different down here.
Yeah, that was very surprising. That was after they had gone into my wallet, found my ID, run my driver's license, and then unhandcuffed me. And after that, I was kind of just asking them why they did what they did and kind of arguing with them a little bit about what right they had to do that.
And what was their explanation? I mean, when you argued with them, what would they explain to you?
Well, they said that I was in a high crime area, which I knew, that's why I went there, and that they had ordinances against loitering. And I explained to them I was not loitering, and if they had asked me, they would have known that. I was working as a professional journalist. But they continued to just say that, you know, I was loitering, that they have laws against that, they're cracking down on that area. And also an African-American officer that was with them said that, you know, they handcuffed me that way out of a sense of protection for themselves.
We're talking to Solomon Moore. He's a reporter for the New York Times. His article, Reporting While Black, appeared in the Times last Friday. And we're asking you for your phone calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, to talk to Solomon Moore about this question, about police tactics in high crime areas, indeed about working as a black man in high crime areas. What do we make of this? Solomon, part of this is indicative, I guess, of the intractable problem with gangs in these areas. And I'm wondering if you're sympathetic at all with the challenge that police face in trying to do their job. I mean, notwithstanding how unpleasant that was there part of you in retrospect that sort of says, well, I sort of understand why they did that given what they have to do, or not? I mean, is this just, did it just come as a total shock to you?
Well, it was a total shock. I mean, I do understand that police officers have to be very careful out there, that it is, you know, what they do is dangerous. And I also understand that it's sometimes difficult to tell who is and who is not a gang member. But I think that's where the problem lies, because what some people argue is that, well, you need to go after gang members. And then there's another group of people who will tell you, well, you don't go after gang members, you go after crimes. And a lot of crimes are committed by gang members. And I think that's where things kind of slipped out there, that they assumed perhaps that I was a gang member and decided to detain me in that manner. However, I wasn't breaking any laws.
And it's interesting, and I'm sure you thought of this, but what happened to you happens to young black men all the time.
Yeah. In fact, the people who I spoke with before the incident and then a little bit after, they were skeptical about me. But some of them did say that, you know, this happens all the time to us. And other people I've talked to say that. And the question is this these good police tactics? Mm. I mean, to treat people this way, whether they are or are not gang members, to go and just kind of detain first and ask questions later.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear from a police officer. You can give us a call at 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK is the number to talk with Solomon Moore about the subject that we're calling broadly Reporting While Black, which was the name of his story in the New York Times. Let's take a call. Meredith is calling from San Antonio. Hi, Meredith.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Thank you. First of all, I just wanted to say I'm sorry to hear that you were treated that way. I think it's horrible. But I was just curious, at the same time that you were handcuffed and detained, were the other children that were standing around, were they also treated that way?
Solomon?
You know, for some reason, I was singled out. There were, you know, like I said, there were like a dozen people out there, but they came up to me and asked me to come forward. I don't know why. I wasn't wearing anything that I would consider gang attire, but perhaps it was because I was the one who looked a little different from the rest.
Yeah. That's very interesting, especially because you sat back for a few minutes and witnessed them selling drugs. You saw it. I don't know how the police didn't see that.
Interesting, Meredith. Well, thanks for the question. We appreciate the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Solomon, I'm wondering if you were the new guy. I mean, in other words, they've been watching this group maybe for days or weeks or even months, and suddenly there's a new guy dressed a little differently mingling with them, and so they assume, I don't know, that you're bringing something in. Who knows? I'm wondering what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. When, like I said, when I got there, no one really took much notice of me at first because, you know, I am African American and I could have lived around there or something. And when I went up and started talking to them, that's when things kind of got a little haywire. And obviously they were under surveillance because the police rolled right up as soon as I arrived.
Hmm. Well, let's go to Adam, who's calling from Portland, Oregon. Hi, Adam.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to comment at my shock at the treatment of your guest. The procedurally, as a former police officer, we're taught, at least here in Oregon, very, very strict guidelines as far as following people's constitutional rights. And so I'm amazed that that his rights were violated in that manner. I'm just it's appalling.
Well, Adam, can you tell me, what are the procedures? I mean, what would have been the norm? I mean, let's say you're the police officer out there and you have a suspicion about Solomon Moore standing there with this group of people. What's the procedure?
I would approach him and say, hi, my name is Officer Adam so-and-so, and I was curious, you know, what you guys are doing here today. And, mm-hmm. and they would give whatever answer they would give. And I would say, well, I was wondering if I could find out, you know, who you are. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing, is establishing who is this person, and obtaining some kind of identification would be the next step if I had probable cause. See, that's the problem, is that there was there's no sound of probable cause in the story, and you must have probable cause in order to be detained, to be searched, etc.
Sure. Well, Adam, I appreciate the call. Thanks. Thanks.
Sure,
thank you very much. Solomon, you know, interesting to hear that point from Adam, but I guess the issue here is police should be focusing on the gang crime rather than the individuals in the gangs. Is that what you come away with from this?
That's what I come away with, and I hear that from a lot of the law enforcement people that I've talked to over the you know, months that I've been working on this beat, that, you know, if you just kind of willy-nilly arrest what you think are gang members, what you're going to have is a more intractable problem, because when they get into the prison system, when they get into the jails, I mean, there are gangs in those places.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the guys they're scooping up are the low-hanging fruit, a lot of the folks that they might come in and out of gangs. I mean, the average gang member, as I say in the piece, you know, he might be in the gang for about a year, and then he's going to filter out eventually. When they get into the criminal justice system, that's a different story.
Right. Well, Solomon Moore, thank you so much for coming in today to talk about this. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's Solomon Moore. He's a New York Times reporter. You can read his article, Reporting While Black, at our blog, which is npr.org/blogofthenation. He joined us from the studios of NPR West today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.